The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Srigga, coming off of a glorious, glorious draft, the winner of which was I, Srigga, and I'm, of course, joined by one of the two other competitors in our draft, in our 90s draft, to be more precise. Dylan, how are you doing?
It's great, Srigga. Do not forget that draft ended in controversy, because at first it was a tie.
It was a tie.
That's true. Yes, between us somehow. So that shows you the quality of the draft, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was very exciting. It was very entertaining.
Yes, exactly. So, if you haven't listened to that show, I would have to highly recommend it to the listeners out there. Tell your friends about it. I think that's something anybody can enjoy. The second part of the voting after the tie was bred in controversy when you spelled my name wrong. And I just, going by the percentages, you know, we had 34% apiece the first time, and somehow I lowered it after taking out one half of the competition. I'm just not buying that as true. I think we have to throw a controversial loss, much like we talk about my football team on here, the Carolina Panthers. There was a lot of controversy in their game last week on Sunday versus the Packers. I think I saw Red Shoes' NFL debut in that game, siding with Green Bay, and I think Red Shoes misspelled my name. The spirit of Red Shoes compelled you, Strigga, and we had some controversial calls. So that's, I'm going to leave it at that, but congratulations for your win. I cannot hate on the spirit of Shinya Hashimoto, and you have proven that Enochism wins, truly, in the hearts of people.
No, this was still not Enochism. This was mid-90s shoot style. That is something completely different.
I don't consider Ogawa shoot styles, to be honest.
Oh, that's true. That's the one guy that I have, but I got Takada, I got Ken Shamrock on my roster. Masakatsu Funaki. You know,
Takada's not a shooter either. He was very bad.
He was bad at it, but he was in a promotion that was very much reliant on that style.
That is true. Hey, listen, as a pro, as a shoot style wrestler, yes. As an actual MMA fighter, let me correct myself.
That's true.
That is what he was bad. As a shoot style wrestler, Takada was actually very talented.
Yeah.
So I will give him. But he was a carny, so in the end, your locker room will come apart with all the different forces that you've had there, for sure. So we'll see what happens in the future of dimensions, our interdimensional rift that we had in the last episode. and now we're back with a normal episode of the show. I enjoyed the draft, but now we're getting back to the sumo hall. Sumoism. In wrestling now, not Enochism, Sumo Hallism.
Sumo Hallism is a great topic for our show. I'm gonna name the show Sumoism. Sumo Hallism, that's it. So, yeah, we got together because the last of the trifecta of Sumo Hall shows actually made air this past weekend. I, due to a lot of work that I had to do, wasn't able to catch the Noah show yet. But I was able to watch the DDT show and the Big Japan show. And from those two, my favorite show was the DDT show. But Dylan, your favorite one actually was the Noah one. And we already talked about that show with WH a couple of weeks ago when it happened. When WH went to the show live. We had a show on the day. And now you've also got the chance to watch the show. So I guess we'll start with your overall thoughts on the Noah Sumo Hall show, the Battle of Aesthetics, and then we'll talk about some of the upcoming cards for Noah a little bit.
See, this is the thing. If you sign up to patreon.com/EasternLariat, it's like you watch the show before they even air. We get the scoops there the day that it happened, a week before it aired. It was only 10 days ago, or not even that, 9 days ago since we had that conversation and had that show. So,
that's true. It feels so long ago, actually.
Yeah, I know. See, so much has happened because there's been so many shows that came across. It feels like a long time. But, yeah, like I said, sign up to the Patreon, people. You get cool stuff on there. And on this show, a lot of his opinions that we talked about before we had even seen the show, me and you, I thought he really gave a great breakdown of the show in hindsight as it came across on TV. It really matched a lot of what he said. They started off with some undercard tag matches, you know, some comedy stuff. Like, they had a match where Mighty Inoue was the special referee between Akitoshi Saito and Masao Inoue versus Tamon Honda and Mitsuo Momota. They had a six-man tag, which we talked about on that show, with Sakuraba teaming up with Hajime Ohara and Osawa versus the team of Hiroki, Juta Miyawaki, and Osamu Nishimura. They had some good, decent exchanges between Sakuraba and Nishimura, I thought, but nothing too crazy. Nothing really worth going out of your way to see on the undercard. You had the 50 Funky Powers, Kazuma Sakamoto in an undercard match. The Stinger match was good with Eddie Edwards and Kotike and Ridgeway, and they really made it seem like Edwards could be more of a factor going forward.
That's good, actually, because Eddie Edwards and Noah has always been a great, great addition to the roster. I wanted to know how the team came across, because on our show with WH we talked about how they totally didn't fit because they all looked so differently in their attire.
Oh, yeah, that's still true. Edwards right now, remember, in TNA, he's doing his, like, Tommy Dreamer gimmick and stuff. But here I thought the wrestling part was actually really good because you have to remember, too, they faced off against Minoru Tanaka, Mochizuki, and Super Crazy was there, too, talking about a team that doesn't fit together.
That's true.
Yeah, see, so to me, Mochizuki versus any of those three, they really teased Ridgeway going against Mochizuki too.
Great. Ridgeway. Yeah. So it's really been a great year for him. He's going to be in 16 Karat next year too. Can't wait to see him live. So that's going to be great too.
Yeah, really strong performer. I think really all those guys I think are really great. But the real, like, the show, the part where you have to take note of things really started after that match, where you had Taniguchi versus Kazuyuki Fujita, your favorite wrestler, Striga, was here.
Yes.
And I have to say, they had a hell of a match for 8 minutes. I thought this was great. And I mentioned this on Twitter. I think everyone's going to talk, like, Fujita is always the one everybody talks about for good and bad. Mm-hmm. But to me, Taniguchi's skill set in this environment is so underrated. To me, Fujita, what he brought, because I mentioned this on our other show, because they had a tag match where he squared off against Hideki Suzuki in August, Taniguchi, that is, and he performed really well, better than you might think with him. And here, this was even more intense, and Fujita brought more violence in his role here, which we had. Of course, he went over in the end, but this didn't even go 8 minutes. I thought it was a really good match. Well worth watching, to be honest with you.
Another great idea to have Taniguchi lose to Fujita here and then challenge Takashi Sugiura for the national title a couple of days later.
That wasn't the best idea.
but what you're going to expect? He's not going to beat Fujita, so that's what's going to happen.
That is true. But I thought the match came across really well, though. Yeah. And
that's what WH said too. So I'm actually kind of intrigued by checking that out.
Really good. And Taniguchi, he was bloodied and choked out Sugiura. So at least they tried to put him over as this like warrior type of. But he could use wins to build up to title matches, to say the least. They had a junior heavyweight tag title match between Kotaro Suzuki and Ogawa. They lost the titles to Tadasuke and Harada. It was a good match. I have to say I wasn't that, you know, enamored with it, but I thought it was a good little match for what it was. And it came across like the crowd was really into Harada and Tadasuke as a team, and Ratels in general. So they were very over. I liked what they did in this match. And it seems like they're transitioning more to Kotaro and Kotike as a team in Stinger now, which is interesting in its own way. It just switches things up a little bit. The division needs some, changing of parts, and you can move Kodage and Harada back together again. It was a good little match, but nothing too crazy. I thought the Fujita match was better than that one, to be honest with you. You had the junior title match, which we all, we were all looking forward to so much between Hayata and Yohei, a match we've never seen before, except on the very last show, the very last show they did. And it was honestly, like, it wasn't that different than that one, believe it or not.
How would it be?
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of the same. The main difference was that the crowd was more into this than they were on the other show. So that was one thing. They didn't go too long, so I was happy about that. But still, 14 minutes is still kind of long for these guys, for me. Then, though, we had a great match with the tag team titles between Axis, Go Shiozaki, and Nakajima versus the Tough of Masaaki Tamiya and Yoshiki Inamura. I thought Inamura did an incredible job in this match in his interactions with both of Axis. I thought this was a great match. One of the best tag team matches of the year. I honestly, not to jump ahead too much, and I know I'm kind of galaxy braining this thought here, but when I finished watching this match, I thought this was on the same level as the Big Japan Walter match.
Oh, that's great. I only heard good stuff about this match. I saw some clips of it, some GIFs of it. We have it rated at 8.33 on Cage Match as we're speaking now, with a lot of great votes for it. It's only topped by the main event of this show, 8.71 for Kiyomiya and Kenno.
Yeah, I thought this had a lot of heart to it, this tag team match here that you can look at. And it was very well paced, too, because it was a 17-minute match, but there was no real downtime in this tag match. It's like they were working hard throughout the entirety of the tag match.
This is what New Japan is clearly lacking, because they just don't have a functioning tag team division anymore. This is the classic Japanese way of putting a young guy over. You pair him with a more experienced wrestler, like in this case Masaaki Tamiya, and you have him go against two veterans like Go Shiozaki and Katsuhiko Nakajima, and you have him look strong, and then he'll still lose, but he'll eventually gain a lot from this performance alone. And that has been the way with tag team titles in Japan for forever, actually. But at some point in history, New Japan ditched that concept, and they are now doing their horrendous tag league with teams that, on paper, these teams are all good, but there's so much of the same, and it's just nothing that really pops out. And then you have a match like this on a Noah card, and you'll see how great tag team wrestling can actually be.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, there's no comparison to any New Japan tag match to this match this year. I have to say, I thought this was an unbelievable performance for both men, especially Inamura. And like you said, that's something that you don't get on, you know, a lot of these New Japan shows. This is something that you could see done more, this kind of push. And the crowd totally took to it with Inamura, I thought. He was one of the stars of the match with great workers in there. Guys like Nakajima, Go, Kitamiya, very good glue guy in the scene. And Nakajima brought a lot of personality, but I especially enjoyed Inamura and Go scoring up. I thought they have a really natural chemistry to them. Really well worth going out of your time. I thought this was every bit on the level of the main event. Great match, in my opinion. So highly recommend that to the listeners out there. And the next two matches are funny because it's like they're almost exactly what you thought they would be going in. Great Muta and Mar Fuji. It was more or less a comedy match. They couldn't really do a real match, so they had Mar Fuji do this kind of like a crazy character to fight Great Muta. There was a tease of someone getting set on fire during this match, quote unquote, and that's all I'll say about this match. When you watch it, you'll understand. When you watch it, you'll understand. But I didn't like it, honestly. I thought it was a huge waste of Mar Fuji, to be honest with you, considering how this played out.
Where is he going? What's he going to do next year?
I don't know. They've had him lose to everyone.
The only thing that I still can come up with is that he's going back to the juniors eventually, but they've not teased anything like that in recent times.
Oh, No. The thing is, they had a good little storyline with him and Harada earlier this year. And they, you know, I thought it could bring up Harada up to the heavyweights, but they could do this a similar thing where Mark Fuchi goes down to fight him, but not this way. not how they've done it, where he loses to everyone, including Great Muta, in this weird match. I think some people probably liked it better than me, but I wasn't into this, to be honest with you. And I'm not really sure what purpose it served, other than, I guess, gave the fans something fun on the show. You know, it was a fun little match. It wasn't, you know, goofy, but just, to me, the wrong tone for this show, especially for a Mark Fuji match at this show, I have to say. I thought both of these guys could have been handled better. Even Muta, are you really going to bring him in for this?
Yeah, you know, you know what they should have done? They should have done Maro Fuji and Mochizuki on this show.
That would have been perfect. I think that would have been the perfect way to do whatever they wanted to do with Maro Fuji. I think that would have been a lot better and gave the fans something more to get into. But, you know, this accomplished what it wanted to, I guess. I just question why they wanted it to be this way.
Yeah.
The national title match was cool. They had Riki Choshu with the title there, the red belt that they have now. Sugera won over Michael Elgin. We knew that already. And to me, it's just, it was an everything you expected kind of match out of it. You look at the names, it's a soul food type of match. We go back and forth with that all the time. I think it's easily enjoyable, but it wasn't like there was much more to it. It really was just that kind of hard-hitting match. I think the attempt of the big spot of this match was Elgin, and we talked about this with WH, was him hitting the burning hammer in front of Kobashi. Just like WH said on our show a week ago, he pointed it out to Kobashi and then did it. And it was well-intentioned, I think. It wasn't like this horrible thing or anything, but I just thought it was more cheesy and how it came across. It was like, oh, okay, he's right there, so I'm going to do his move. I'm a big fan of yours, so let me do it. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like I said, I could see opinions varying widely on that. And I liked it for what it was, though. It was a good match. It was worth watching. But I would put it actually below the main event, the tag titles, and Fujita and Taniguchi. I thought all three of those were better than the national title match. But they were all good, though. That shows you how strong the show was.
Is it kind of crazy that Riki Choshu is now an authority figure for Pro Wrestling Noah?
That is weird. And they've been... See, this is the whole thing on this show. There are so many weird names that aren't really Noah guys. Just like Fujita. And I liked his match, but I don't think that these guys really resonate with Noah fans as much as you would think, you know?
No.
Yeah.
Why would they?
Well, exactly. They don't, and they've been teasing this thing with Kenno and Tamura,
yeah.
Which I freaking
love. That's the funniest thing. That would be crazy if they did the match.
And like they're heavily teasing this.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
I never expected it. Like, let me put it that way. We have no answers as to why or how this all happened, but they're heavily teasing that going into 2020. Which I think is awesome, but on the other hand, it's like these guys really don't have anything to do with Noah on the outside, so we'll see how they get over. But Choshu, he got a nice reception for his music and everything here. Muta was brought in. The main event, though, was the title match between Kenno and Kaito Kiyomiya, and this was a really strong match, I thought, you know, for the main event. I think I like this more than WH said on our show. But I will say that it was a match that wanted to be special. You know, it's like they wanted to. You know, like, so that's, and I don't mean that as a compliment. You know.
I know. It's
yeah.
What I've been saying all year about these long title matches, you can really name any promotion. Except for maybe Big Japan. But there is this, I coined this phrase, and I'm still going to use it this year and next year going forward. It's the forced epicness of the world title picture.
I will say, unlike some other styles, because I thought about the same point going after this match was over, because it really was. It was about 30 minutes long. It wasn't too insane, but still 30 minutes is a long time.
Yeah.
I'd say the last half of the match got there. And it was a great match by the end, last part of the match. But it wasn't complete enough to be a true match of the year candidate or anything like that. But the thing that this match did have over similar length matches to me is that it felt like the long rivalry between these two truly came to a head. And it felt like there was a quote-unquote real sense of struggle and urgency that you don't get in some of these other matches where it seems like they're kind of running through, you know, stuff. Like and God bless them, but some of these Kento matches where you have Wada and stuff like that. You know, I talked about the Nomura match on the Patreon show, the All Japan show on there, or the Jake Lee match, rather, where he was on the outside and he just kind of popped back up. This felt like it had a much more real sense of urgency between them. And I thought these two, they did have that. And yes, if you took some time off of this, it would be better. It would apply here, yes. But I think it was still a great match and a worthy main event to end the show. And it accomplished what it needed to and put over Kiyomiya well. And I thought the crowd was really into it as well. So I thought it was very...
Yeah. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Opinions may vary on that. I don't know the overall consensus, but I thought it was a really good match. A great match, even, I'd have to say. So... I'm looking at the cage match ratings, 8.71, so I think the fans have to agree, yep. Or a lot of the people rating it now. So I look at the show up and down. To me, those last the tag match and the main event made it a great show already, but you had a lot of good stuff on the undercard too, like the Fujita match, the junior heavyweight tag title match. Even the junior heavyweight title match wasn't that... it was better than they did before, but it still wasn't anything I'll go crazy about or recommend, but still, it didn't drag the show down. Mm-hmm. Really, the only thing I didn't like on the show was the Great Muta match, and everything else was either good or great. So I really enjoyed this show. I thought it was a complete show, and well-deserving of its good reaction, which, I mean, if you look at the shows beforehand, I think pretty much everyone thought DDT would by far be the most highest-drawing show. But actually, Noah got really close, I think closer than a lot of people thought, to DDT here. So I was proud of the effort they put forward here, and I was really happy with the show. I thought it was one of the better of the year, actually, in Japanese wrestling. But I haven't thought about that completely, so I don't want to make any definitive statements. After watching it, though, I thought the effort was there. It felt like a big-time promotion. The crowd was into it. I thought it was one of my favorite shows of the year for Noah, for sure.
Awesome. That's great. You know, with over 5,500 fans, they really did well. They probably did better than most figured, and they surely did much better than people initially thought when they announced the show earlier this year. So, for them, that's a big statement. It remains to be seen where that statement is going to be heading, what's in for them in 2020. But they are definitely finishing off the decade in much better shape than I had thought at the beginning of a decade. Because remember back in that day when the 2010s began, how turbulent the history of the stories in Pro Wrestling Noah went with Kobashi and Burning leaving. And I really wouldn't have figured out that Noah would even last more than a decade longer than it did now.
I never thought that they would go under. I think the worst time period for me was probably the Suzuki-gun era, like the dark days of that, because it just felt like there was a company that was going to be left with in shambles. Even before they left,
kind of did, you know.
Yeah, they kind of did when they left. But Uchida coming in, I think they. I thought he was really a good owner, kind of underrated, to be honest with you, in the long term for Noah, because they were able to stabilize under his watch.
Yeah.
With a new identity with the hard-hitting style. You had Sugera with his great title reign that really stabilized thing. And now you've got this guy, Kiyomiya, who I think has done a great job. To be honest with you, I can't imagine this company, and I don't want to put it all on anybody, but... Without Kiyomiya, I don't know if this company would be where it's at right now. And it's not necessarily because of him. Similar to Kento a few years ago, you need a guy that the fans can hang their hat on as the next ace, the true ace. And Sugira's great, but he's 50 years old.
Yeah.
You know, real talk. Like it's nothing against him, but that you can't count on him to. You know, break a new path for the company. You need that new guy. And just like when Kento came into All Japan those years ago, now you have this guy here to me, he has to be considered a Wrestler of the Year candidate, or an MVP for the company at least, because if you take him out of this equation, even when they announced the Sumo Hall show, everyone panned this decision as crazy. And it turned out way better than pretty much anyone thought. After the last show, Osaka, I actually had a good feeling about the show. I think I said 5,500 was my expectation for the show, which was higher than a lot of people. And they met it. So I think you have to really give this whole outfit pretty much in Noah a lot of credit for doing this. Will they be able to maintain consistency? That's another question.
Yeah, so they have their tour going on. Starting Over 2019 is the name of the tour, and they will basically, they didn't really change a lot, because in the junior scene they still have Ratels feuding with Stinger, and there is an IPW Junior Heavyweight title match. Atsushi Kotoge faces Daisuke Harada. It's not a new match either. But then in the main event picture we have Axis and Shuhei Taniguchi going against Sugiura-gun of Takashi Sugiura, Hideki Suzuki, and Elio del Dr. Wagner Jr. for that show on November 16. And then there's another Kirken Hall December 3rd. And for that, we have the GHC Junior Heavyweight title match between Hayata and Chris Ridgeway. It's going to be Ridgeway's great chance to get a title. And also, Fujita returns, Katsuyuki Fujita returns to team with Sugiura and Hideki Suzuki against Kenno, Masaki Tamiya, and Yoshiki Inamura. We're going to see where that leads us. And there is a 15th anniversary special singles match between Katsuyuki Nakajima and Go Shiozaki. So Axis faces. And also on this show, very cool stuff, Dragon Bane and Iho de Canis Lupus will have a match. Good looking card.
Yeah, they're really good for Lucha fans. Dragon Bane is really going to turn some heads.
Yep.
Kynes Lupus is a good worker too. They're brothers, so they should have a really good match with each other. I don't know how they're going to mix and match these guys with the Noah roster, but they could be great additions to the junior heavyweight scene. And that's what I love about Noah. You have the tag division, you have the junior division. It seems like every division gets a lot of care put into it, and I think that's something you don't have with any other company. Definitely not Big Japan.
No.
But, even in New Japan, they don't really put them over like that Noah does. And that it feels like every division feels special and like a good deal. So I really like what they're doing there in the company. And they're really ending the decade on a really positive note. And hopefully good things are to come in 2020.
So my favorite Sumo show, as I said, not watched the Noah show yet, was the DDT Ultimate Party 2019. You mentioned they only drew a couple of hundred more than Noah did. It's always like DDT has this giant set where they really don't use a lot of seats in Sumo Hall, and they still sell out their tickets that they put out. And I don't know about you, I very much enjoyed this show, and even though it was such a long show with over 6 hours, I felt that some of the matches really got cut short, and that's not me saying that the show should have been longer, but that's me saying maybe cut some of the matches from the show. Like, for example, the Keisuke Ishii versus Fuminori Abe match for the Independent World Junior Heavyweight title. I thought this was an excellent match, but it only got 7 minutes. Give this match like 15 or maybe even 20, and these two guys can really have a great, great match in Sumo Hall that's going to go over. But because it was in the middle of this card, the fans reacted greatly to it, but because it was in the middle of this card, it didn't really come across that well. Then we had this, of course, the UWA World Trios title match, the KOD Tag Team title 4-way hardcore match. And I get that this show was designed to present the entirety of DDT, of their complete universe. But in doing so, some of the stuff got sadly cut short.
Yeah, you really just... You hit the nail on the head of my problems with this show more than any particular quality or lack thereof. It's just this was a 6.5-hour show. Yeah. Like, you know, like when you look at it, and there were probably three matches that I really liked on this 6.5-hour show. And then one of them was the Ishii and Abe match, which I completely agree with you. 7.5-minute match between these two guys. And they had, I love the mat work they did here. That was one of my most anticipated matches coming into the show. I really wanted this to be a great match. But all they had was 7.5 minutes, and they did a great job with it. It was a great sprint. And, you know, hopefully they, you know, changed some people's opinions on them in the crowd. But like you said, it just didn't feel that important. Considering where they were on the card and how the match went.
Basically, you know? the entire story of Keisuke Ishii's entire career in DDT, just not that important.
I know. Whenever people talk about, like, who would you move around that could use a fresh start, he's always one of the names that pops up in my head. Like, yeah. I think he went to, like, Noah. He could be, like, a great addition. And when he had his All Japan Junior title run, he did a really good job with that too. So we know he has the potential for it, but just in DDT, it's hard for him. And Abe, you know, he's one of the, you know, a really hot young up and comer type of wrestler, but not here. It was a really good match for what it was, well worth watching, but not anything like this. Could have been a great match, I feel like, if they had twice as much time.
I was told he's a great guy. You know,
I love him.
I have that on good information.
I'm sure he is.
You know, but still, this show was... I liked it so much. I was a big, big fan of the Princess Tag Team title match. Mio Watanabe and Rika Tatsumi beat Misao and Sakisama for the title. I thought Watanabe looked so strong in this match, and she got really over with the crowd. I liked the Union Pro Max title match between Takanashi and Sekine. I was surprised that Takanashi won the title, which probably means that Basara and DT are not going to completely cut their ties, which is very good, because I very much fear for the future of Basara if they are going independent. They could just very easily disappear under the radar. Just look at what happened to the former K-Dojo, to AW. You know?
It just makes you wonder what brought this decision on.
Yeah.
Like, to leave, you know.
Yeah.
There must be some kind of story we don't know about.
Yeah, they also put Isami Kodaka over Zanshiro Takagi in his supposedly last DDT match, in this crazy plastic cases match.
Yeah, that was a weird match. Like I said, on there, I have to say. You know, and then he dove on the boxes himself after the match.
Yes.
Kodaka did, in Kodaka fashion, for sure.
Sure.
That was the highlight to me, was just seeing him do crazy stuff, pretty much. The Princess tag titles, Saki, great charisma, but so limited in the ring. I can never really see her appeal. I thought it dragged a bit in the middle, where even Misao was doing story stuff with Rika Tatsumi, which is something, if you follow Tokyo Joshi Pro, they had their deal before. It's funny because this tag titles reign has only lasted for 4 months, but due to the champions' great character work, Saki and Misao, because they're such great characters and so charismatic, that it feels like a full reign. It felt like a big deal. Mm-hmm. The finish with the... What did you think of the missile hips to win the match?
That was a great finish, I thought.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, not a terrible match. It was a pretty solid tag match, I thought.
No, it's about Sakisama. No. It's so weird how she always comes across much better in Tokyo Joshi Pro than she comes across in DDT, don't you think?
I think she, I thought she did for her standards. Like I said, I think her athletic ability is she's so limited in ring that it's hard for me to really be into her either way. But I think her character work was just as good here as in Tokyo Joshi Pro. But it was more about Misao and Rika.
With Misao now losing the tag title, I really hope that they are going to push her more in the singles direction, because with this heel turn, I thought she gained so much that she just wasn't able to bring across with her masked character that she had. Now, with all her facial expressions that she does during her matches, she's just on another level. and should really be in the title picture for the Princess of Princess title.
Yeah, she, you know, that's the thing, that's the best part about all this. I think that's where Saki really shines, was helping Misao get away from the, you know, crazy comedic superhero character that she had with Hyper Misao. Mm-hmm. Now they had great chemistry together, great look, obviously, really good heel work, and that's really what made them great here. And this match is really about her and Tatsumi, the story they told there. But yeah, that's good stuff there. You know, it was a pretty decent little tag match, I thought. Nothing too crazy. The Union Max title, you know, it was good for what it was.
Yep.
Takanashi is underrated on the roster, I would say. He's somebody that doesn't always get love, but I would say he's an all-around performer, somewhat similar to Hirata, who is a great comedic performer, but I also think is kind of underrated. If they made him a serious worker, he could do good on that here. And Sakine, this is as good as I've seen him look in a long time.
Yeah.
I guess someone like Takanashi.
Sakine actually has had some good title matches during his reign, for example, against Sagat. You know, that's really something that flies under the radar, because I don't think that a lot of people watch Basara, actually.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's kind of crazy that, you know, Basara, they have a lot of interesting people on that roster. If you're a fan of indie, you know, like if we were in the, you know, the years 5 years ago where people were really able to watch more Japanese wrestling, you know, and stuff like that, I think that would be more over, like his title reign. But in this day and age with the paywall and everything, that really limits him. But yeah, I thought that was a good match too. There was just so much on this card.
Yeah, what do you think about the Princess of Princess title match?
I liked it. That was my second favorite match on the show.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I loved the... I thought Sakazaki had a lot of intensity in her work. You know, that really stood out to me. And I thought these two had great chemistry. Very smooth together, I noticed, for Shoko and Sakazaki.
Yeah, totally right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was really my main thought of the show. I thought it really, I don't want to say over-delivered, because I'm a fan of both of these girls. I think they're really good workers. Shoko's in CML right now, but I thought this was a great match, honestly. I thought it was the second best on the card. I went 4 stars with it, so I 8 out of 10. Good match. I really liked it, actually.
You know, I think it totally over-delivered, because I was not too much of a fan of the Shoko Nakajima reign. Even the recent last defense that she had against Misao was kind of behind of my expectations that I had for the match. So Shoko did not have a very good reign, in my opinion, but it was hard to have a good reign after she defeated Mio Yamashita, who had such a great, great title reign for so long. But now with Yuka Sakazaki, I think the title... Is where it should be right now, because she's not only one of the standouts in Tokyo, she probably also is going to be in AEW going forward, I guess. So
yeah.
that's a good sign. And yeah, I really, really thought that this was a good match. Very good match, even.
Yeah.
And they
have a great history together too, Sakazaki. They played the video beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
That showed them teaming together in the past, you know, kind of like friends and enemies in Tokyo Joshi Pro. And they're really two of the main people in the company. You know, these are like stalwarts of Tokyo Joshi Pro. So for them to get this spot, I think was really good for them. Shoko, if you put her with someone like Sakazaki, I think that just shows the difference between Sakazaki and someone like Misao, who's more of a character than a great worker. I think Sakazaki brings great wrestling to the table, more so than Misao would.
What do you think about the Kenny Omega match on the show?
See, this was the one that got most of the publicity for the show, I think, in the West, the tag match. I thought Miyu, because this was Omega and Riho representing AEW versus Antonio Honda and Miyu Yamashita. I thought Yamashita was by far the best person in this match. And not just in terms of wrestling, but what did you think of her dusty dancing elbow.
Ah, oh, come on. You know, this was just purely designed to be a DDT comedy match. And, you know, for what it was, I liked it. And I basically liked all the spots that they did in this match. It was just fun.
I thought Omega put a ton of effort into this match compared to his AEW work, to be honest with you.
You know, I like this condensed form of Kenny Omega much more than his outgoing AEW thing that he had recently with Jon Moxley. The thing that Kenny Omega wanted to bring across in this match is that there is actually a way to do mixed tag matches with women and have it in a way that you're actually partners and do double team moves instead of just tagging in and out. And I thought that that was that came across very well.
I think really this match was I also thought Riho looked a lot better here than in AEW as well. I don't know if it's comfort or what.
Yeah, I was not a fan of the Emi Sakura match.
Oh yeah, yeah, in AEW, yeah. That's a whole other that story was crazy. I did a show on AEW on the Patreon. Yeah, see, the Patreon, you get everything, even American wrestling. But on there, I was like, you know, it's just crazy to me how you could have a match in a major promotion and not have any build up to it, to where people are. One of the performers is on Twitter saying, "Please, I have a problem with recognition in this company. Please talk about me and tell my story." Like what? And I love Emi Sakura. She is like she's a legend for real. But they didn't do them any favors, the company in that match, and probably largely Omega's hand is behind the women's division there. So
yep.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know about that. The match was fine. The crowd wasn't into it either because they didn't build it up into it at all. Unlike this match in DDT, where the crowd was buying into everything. I think that's really a big part of things. And I thought Yamashita like just is a great worker to me. Even in comedy situations, I thought she was funny. A lot of the Honda stuff, which really made this match. I think your mileage on this match will vary depending on Honda.
I love Antonio Honda.
Yeah, his stuff didn't land with me until they actually started to wrestle serious with Omega, which I actually thought was really good. Yeah. Like that really surprised me. Because I was just like, okay, this match is not really my style anyway. And, you know, Omega's in there. I'm not his biggest fan. But then they started to wrestle normal and are, like, more serious. And I was really – I thought they did a really good job. And I really thought Miyu did a great job in this match, bringing Riho up. I thought it was a good match. But, you know, I think it was too much of a spectacle for me to rate it greatly. But I think if you're into that style and into Honda and all that hits for you, you'll think this was a great match.
Mm-hmm. So I saw the rating for the main event first, before I saw it, and it's 9.19 at Cage Match. And you know, going in, I thought, who's going to lose this match? But after I saw the match, I thought they did exactly the right thing to put Harashima over once again. I mean, the guy is 45 years old. You gotta wonder for how long he's gonna be able to perform on this level. And in my opinion, they played off this storyline so perfectly, where they had Harashima losing to Takeshita a couple of times before in tag matches to the Walls of Takeshita, so his version of Chris Jericho's double Boston Crab.
That was so well built.
Yes, sometimes through a towel throw, other times referee stoppage, and they built this so intensely and greatly. And Takeshita also managed to work over Harashima's back for the first half of the match, basically. And Harashima had to fight back from this bodywork that Takeshita put over him. But then also, Harashima was able to come back with great moves. For example, this great Rana, reverse Rana from the top that Takeshita sold so masterfully. And going to the Somato in the end. Also with all the guys ringside, with the disaster box ringside. Kudo was ringside on commentary even. This was just... The entire history of DDT felt like came together in this match, with the old and the new coming together for one of the greatest main events that I've seen in a DDT show in a long time.
You know, out of all three shows, this was my favorite match.
Yeah.
Of the Sumo Hall shows. I thought this was an incredible performance. These guys... I thought before, you know, when they hyped this match up and before the match actually happened, I thought Takeshita was going to win. Like I thought Harashima,
yeah,
you know, I didn't think he was going to win. I didn't think Hiroshima was going to win. But when you see the stuff going on, especially when Kudo was there, it felt like an almost, you had Disaster Box at ringside, and they utilized them really well in this match with Takeshita actually got in their face and stuff at a major point in the match where he went after Disaster Box and Kudo.
Yep.
And stuff. And I thought that was really well done. I thought that the only thing that I have to say to add on to that in a critical sense, because I felt like they had a nice pace with this match. It wasn't a fast-paced match. It was more slower early on. And I thought it was going to lead to this big finish. But it's a rare case of a match that was both long but yet too short, because I felt like the finishing run set up was kind of too fast considering the previous 25 minutes of the match. I thought they didn't have that huge finishing run that I would have expected here. But you did have big spots, though. You had stuff like the top-roped Poisoned Rana that Takeshita just took a great bump on. Like Daredevil, a champion right there when he took that big bump. You had the story stuff with Hiroshima, Disaster Box on the outside. The back work from Takeshita that you mentioned I thought was really, really well done. And that walls of Takeshita spot that the crowd went absolutely nuts for. I thought these guys worked a great match, played the crowd exactly how you wanted. And for me, at least, you got a surprise winner.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a highly enjoyable match. Definitely my favorite DDT match this year. I thought this was a great performance by both men. Well worth a watch from anybody. Even if you don't like DDT, I think this is something that anybody can watch and enjoy. And Takeshita delivers again. He has to be one of the most underrated performers in Japan, in DDT and abroad, because he's up there as a worker with anybody, I feel like, in Japan. I think Takeshita has to be considered one of the best in-ring performers in Japan.
Yeah, for sure. And Hiroshima, man, he's just 2 years younger than Togi Makabe, who won't even take a bump anymore in his matches. And Hiroshima is working like a crazy man. He's a double champion now, and he's not defending two titles at the same time. He's defending them individually because they are two separate entities. This guy is an amazing workhorse for DDT, and he's been the face of the company for so long. And for Takeshita, he's going to be able to headline many, many more Sumo Hall shows down the line with the DDT. For Hiroshima, as I said, we don't know for how long he'll be in this position. But man, what a great finish for this show to have Hiroshima on top again here. And
on top of it. Yeah, that's another good point you made. Like, this was something that you could have Takeshita win, but he didn't lose anything losing this match.
No, they made up after the match. They had this great conversation in the ring. They hugged, and it was just great.
I thought everything about it was perfect. I thought this was an incredible match. So I loved it, and great job on that. Like I said, it took a long time to get there, but I thought that the ending was such a good moment that you have to really respect it.
So next up for DDT is a show in Curriken Hall, November 24. Hiroshima defends the KOD Openweight title against Yuki Ino, who won a recent gauntlet in a Shinkiba show. I'm really glad that this Yuki Ino push didn't only last during the Rugby World Cup, but it seemingly is going to continue, because I think the guy really showed his worth to the DDT fans. And there's a KOD tag team title match. Chris Brooks and Masahiro Takanashi cash in their title shot against Daisuke Sasaki and Soma Takao. Saki Akai has a 7-match series, the first one against Tsukasa Fujimoto. Then the team of Antonio Honda and Mio Yamashita continues to live on against Konosuke Takeshita and Jiro Ikumen Kuroshio, this time with a bunch of undercard tag matches, obviously also added to the mix. And then we have a tournament coming up, the D-King, or the D-O Grand Prix 2020. And the D-King Grand Prix 2020, of course, is held entirely in the year 2019. Just much like last year's tournament was the 2019 D-King Grand Prix, and now we have the 2021 and 2019. Block A is Konosuke Takeshita, Tetsuya Endo, Keisuke Ishii, Chris Brooks, Yuki Ueno, Yuki Ino, and Shihiro Hashimoto. Block B is Harashima, Soma Takao, Yukio Sakaguchi, Naomi Yoshimura, Bull James, Masato Tanaka, and one person I am missing because I have Soma Takao twice on here.
Would that be Sasaki?
That would be Daisuke Sasaki, that's right. Yes.
I love how you didn't even talk about their match on the DDT show.
Yeah, that's nothing that I need to talk about. So, there's going to be some cool matches here. Like, for example, Masato Tanaka in Block B squaring off against Harashima, against Sakaguchi, Yoshimura. It's going to be cool. Shiro Hashimoto against the likes of Yuki Ueno, Chris Brooks, Ishii, Endo, Takeshita. That's going to be great. There is going to be the final on December 28th, Currican Hall. And the winner of the tournament, I think, is going to challenge at the first Currican Hall show of the new year. That's what I think. So,
yep. That makes sense.
Sounds like a great tournament. That was DDT. And let us transfer our attention to Big Japan Pro Wrestling because they also had a Sumo Hall show. With not such a big attendance, a little bit over 3,000 fans. When I saw the attendance, I didn't really know what to make of it, but I guess for a Big Japan attendance, that is still good. But in comparison to Noah and DDT, it was not as good.
You have to consider that they had the promotion with DDT, though.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
The double tick, though. Like, this wasn't a good number.
No, that's a good point on your part, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, basically, if you bought a ticket to the DDT show, you get one for the Big Japan show. So there should have been more, like to me, at least on this show.
Yeah, so my main talking point about the Big Japan show, I watched the Strong World Heavyweight title match, and it was very much a Daichi Hashimoto singles performance, right?
Yeah, you already know I think it sucked.
I do know.
Yeah.
Like, they always try so hard, and they tried so hard with the video package that we saw before the match that was very well produced and that showed the history that Koe Sato had in 01, which was, it's crazy how comparable his history was because he also never was able to beat the big guys in his promotion, the big main event players in this promotion with the likes of Shinya Hashimoto and Naoya Ogawa back in the day. And Daichi Hashimoto here always seemed like he was never going to beat these forces like Shuji Ishikawa back in the day and now Koe Sato here in Big Japan. But here he went over Koe Sato. But as soon as the match started, it felt like the air got sucked out of the building. And nobody really cared much about this match. And what distracted me so much from the match was how Daichi Hashimoto screamed all the time. Sometimes when he was in offense, sometimes when he was in a hold, sometimes when he was breaking free, it was always the same shrieking noise that he made, which was very weird and distracted me from the action. But overall, it was just not a very compelling match overall. Dictated by Koe Sato very early on, Hashimoto came back and then won the match, basically.
Yeah, it's funny because he did that yelling and stuff. That was like 2 minutes into the match.
Yes. Very dramatic.
And I feel like I've made this point on him before on his screeching selling. This isn't the first time he's done this because I remember specifically
the
saying
first time that it came to my attention this badly.
Yeah, because I remember telling you before on this show saying something to the effect of he's been watching his Will Ospreay tapes, and because I noted that down here again, and I was like, I've said this before, and so I know that I've said this before. I don't remember when exactly, but I know he's done this before. But it was very noticeable here.
Yeah,
his screaming and selling attempt, I guess here. I guess you could tell the crowd wasn't hot at all for this match. You know, Sato really wasn't interested in doing much here either. To be honest, it felt like there was a long long leg lock spot in the middle, 20-minute match. This wasn't good.
It was a long triangle choke sequence too.
Yeah, this wasn't a good match. Like I said, there's to me, why is he winning the title? Like that's the main question. Like for you have to lay this on themselves. You have to lay this on Big Japan themselves. Why is he winning the title?
You know, the one positive note that I can say about this is that actually when Koei Sato won the title, I was so down on it because I was so sure he would not do a business for the likes of Daichi Hashimoto or Hideyoshi Kitani, but here he did, actually. He did.
Yeah, he did. I remember us having that conversation.
He put him over, and that's very positive. But they try so hard with Daichi, and it's not going to work out for them.
He's the one.
You can totally tell how his title rate is going to be because we saw him be champion before. And it didn't work out. They went back to Hideki for that.
Not only did it not work out, it was such a disaster that they had to abort mission nearly 2 months into it because the houses were very, very low.
Yeah,
like as champion, it wasn't even like it didn't work. It was a very bad title reign, business wise.
And that's just something that is going to haunt them in the end because. Daisuke Sakimoto, he's not going to be around forever. Even Yuji Okabayashi is not going to be around forever. He's 37 years old. Yeah, of course he's going to have some more good years. But man, who's going to be main eventing down the line for them?
If I had my way, it would be the guys in the opener. the three guys.
I know. Even Ryuichi Kawakami. You remember when he beat Yuji Kobayashi and nothing came from it ever?
Yeah. Yeah, remember when I told you that's exactly what would happen?
Yeah, I did.
Like you said.
I never learned my lesson, Dylan.
It's okay. I'm not judging you. I'm just stating because we all want to believe Striga. We all want to believe in Kawakami, but it's like no way. He's never going to be a main eventer in this company or win the title. And it's a shame because he's a talented guy. But you know, just looking at how they booked, for some reason they believe in Daichi more than all of these other guys, and why that is. I wish I had those answers because, I guess you asked who will be main eventing years down the line. It'll probably be Daichi, like you said, if things keep going as they go.
Yeah. But let's talk about the positives on this card. You already mentioned the young guys in the opening. Weird dark match with Kikutaro actually being in the ring.
That wasn't what I was talking about.
Yeah, I know. No, you mentioned the guys in the six-man tag, Akira Yodo, Takuo Kato, and Yuki Ishikawa. Two of them will be in a strong division. The other one, Yuki Ishikawa, will be a deathmatch wrestler down the line. And man, even Katsuki Hashimoto is so far down the card on here, on this show, and in general in Big Japan. It's so crazy to think that this guy had this upside not too many years ago, but now he's here. And,
He reminds me of the same stuff we said about Ishii in DDT.
Yeah.
Like, he's somebody that could really use a start. Like, they should try and trade those two and see what they can do
That's a great idea, actually.
Yeah, I think he's someone that, if he went to somewhere where he could really shine, like All Japan or Noah in the junior division, I think he could be a great piece and a main event piece as a junior heavyweight division, a champion type of person. Mm-hmm. But in Big Japan, it's never came together, and everyone always thought it would, but it just never has, unfortunately.
We had this 10-man tag match of Kobayashi Gun against Great Kojika / Muno Tayo, which basically was a Brahman match. It was what it was. But this card actually, in my opinion, picked up in the middle with Jake Lee and Naoya Nomura against Katsumi Kikuta and Ryuichi Kawakami. Some very good sequences between Jake Lee and Kawakami, which again fueled my hopes for Kawakami eventually being in the Champion Carnival next year.
That would be cool. I think that's something that's realistic, too, just to be in there. You know, I have to give it up with Kikuta here, because I was down on him before, and I think we were all down on him. But I will say this, he at least, he got the crowd into it with his antics here.
Yeah, exactly. He's the anti-Daichi. Like, they don't really, well, they pushed him for a cup of coffee this year.
Yeah,
they don't really give him a lot, but
he's
trying.
Yeah, like, I have to give him some credit. In this tag team with Kawakami, I'm kind of coming around on him. In a way, let's not go crazy and say he should be the champion or anything, but like for this role, he's doing a good job at it, and I think you have to give him some props for there. And I'm a big fan of, obviously, of Lee and Nomura. I think they're a great team and like really strong workers. And we never actually talked about the Jake Lee the title defense in the show, so this is a random break right now, but what did you think of his match with Kento, Striga?
I thought it was an excellent match.
Yeah, me too. Like, really strong match.
Yeah, it's probably going to be one of my favorite matches of the year at the end.
Wow, you might have liked it even more than me, but a lot of people said that. They thought it was a really great match, and I thought it was a really strong performance from Jake, especially. I thought he really stood out in the match itself. These two have a lot of upside, Lee and Nomura. And I think Kawakami, like you said, I think I'm really not believing in him as any kind of future in Big Japan.
Why would you believe in any of the young guys in Big Japan?
Yeah, exactly. Like you're exactly right, Striga. Like, I really don't believe, even Nomura. Like, I remember when Okabayashi beat Nomura and everyone was like, oh, Nomura's for sure getting the title sooner rather than later, and his push is coming and it's going to be great. To me, I didn't want to be a downer, but I was just thinking, like, man, there's no guarantee that he's the title by any means. Yeah. And I would actually lean towards it not happening, even next year. So we'll see how it goes. And if it does happen, it'll probably end up being too late, just like with Kawakami now. Because if he won the title now, I feel like a lot of people don't believe in him in this company. But the match was good, though. The tag match, I liked a lot. Definitely a lot better than that Muto Taiyo match. Listen, when Great Kojika is like the most spry member of a team, it's problems on that 5-man tag, on that 10-man tag. So how did Hideki was in that match, and Orca Udo, my guy.
Your guy.
Udo. Yeah, he was my guy. Not anymore. Not this Orca stuff, but a terrible performance. But the tag match was a lot better, I would say, with that All Japan, Big Japan. I will say this, though. And it seems like, you know, there's something missing in terms of the true hatred, like the intra-promotional hatred, like with Noah and New Japan in the old days, like 2003, which it really isn't the old days. But like for me, at least, like back then, there was a ton of like heat. Even like the 0-1 and New Japan feud in
that
the late
great.
2000s. Yeah, that had a ton of hatred to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't sense that type of stuff between these two companies. Whenever they have matches, they have good matches, but I don't sense, like, I'm going to kill you. Like, there's not that, you know, vibe from Nomura or Lee or any of them, really.
Well, Jun Kasai tried. Toshiyuki Sakura tried.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different that's a whole different match where people tried to kill people. But yes, that did happen on this card. You make a good point.
Yeah, I know. But this had a good vibe to it, definitely.
Yeah.
A Strong Hearts against Abe, Kamitani, and Takuya Nomura. Not so much. It was get in, get out. It was fine, but, you know, I thought it would have been more.
I thought that Lindemann is a really natural heel, always.
That is definitely a good take, yes.
And that's something that the other match didn't have, like, to me. Like, I mean, no offense to Lee and Nomura, but like they're not as hateable as Lindemann, to me. And Irie, I thought they did a good job. Whenever he got in, he was a real powerhouse, I felt like, here. So I thought they booked the match well, but, you know, this could have been better, I think, too, if they were able to flesh it out a little bit more, because this really wasn't that much longer than... This was actually shorter than the tag team match for All Japan. So I think if they had a little bit more time and a little bit more meat to this match, they could have done something good. Because I like what we saw here, and I think that we had a good little match. I think I liked it a little more than you, actually. I thought this was a solid little intramural
just solid. Nothing too crazy. What about the junior title match?
Oh, that was terrible. I hated that match.
I didn't get it at all. I like so for the first elimination, Tajiri got eliminated by Yoshino. Then he missed it, Sekifuda, so Yoshino could eliminate Sekifuda. Then Tajiri missed it, Aoki. Then Hashimoto came out to save Aoki from the mist, and then Aoki just won the match. I did not understand this at all.
Let me tell you what this match was really about. This was a chance for Tajiri to mist everyone in green, red, and blue colors. That's literally the only point of this match. He could use all three colors.
Yeah, I guess that's the point of it. Yeah.
Tajiri's even worse than Daichi, like, to me. Like, I cannot stand Tajiri anymore. I'm sorry. I can't do it anymore. Tajiri is just a very bad worker at this point. And this match was poorly set up. Nothing was accomplished. I'm a fan of Aoki. Yoshino is somebody I always think is super underrated. Sekifuda has a good future. But what was this? Like, what was the point of this match? Like, it was totally stupid. And now you have... hopefully they give Hashimoto and Aoki a much better chance at a big show to have a good match that we could see and put over this title. Because I think if you just look at those two together, I think if it came down to Yoshino and Aoki, but they gave him like 1 or 2 minutes before Tajiri came running out again. So if you gave like an actual good match, they could deliver. The talent is there. It's just company is not behind.
They are doing Katsuki Hashimoto against Yuya Aoki on the next show that they'll have in December in Yokohama Budokan.
Okay.
Not Yokohama Budokan, Yokohama Bunka.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully they have a good match. Well, is it on there? They can use it. But so, I think Aoki is a talented guy.
Yeah. So, I don't know. The deathmatch stuff was the usual stuff, I thought. Crazy Lovers against Takahashi and Ricky Shane Page was pretty good with these weird text strips that they used in the match. I thought
those were so stupid. Like, yeah. I thought the text strips.
The finish was crazy when he just threw him into the strips with his face first.
I know you had to do this because you can't really use the light tubes. So they had to do these weird gimmicks, but I didn't.
Ito and Takashi Sasaki, that is, teamed up because of the 20th anniversary of Ruji Ito against Jun Kasai and Toshiyuki Sakuda. Sakuda took this, I don't know how to phrase it, this bump from the top of the entrance of Sumo Hall, and he wanted to land on this table, but he totally blew it and landed right on his tailbone, which looked like it was like, how high was it?
Oh,
I don't know.
It had to be up there. It had to be at least 10, 15 feet.
Yeah, right. I was surprised that he was able to walk after that. And he was still able to use his usual gimmicks in the match with the syringe and stuff that he had. You know, that's... It's what it is. It's just the deathmatch stuff, you know.
This is such a... I will say this was a much more violent match than the main event. I thought that the tag match was more violent than the main event.
Yeah. There was much more violent. I kind of was surprised how tame in comparison Kodaka and Miyamoto was.
I know. I mean, they had a spot in this match where everyone got...
I mean, they used the nail board, yeah.
Yeah. The nail board was in the main event, yeah. They had the it was more about the ladder.
Yeah,
more I think the main event, but this match they had like a spot where everyone had syringes and skewers. and they started fighting when they were in their mouths. It was very disgusting, I would say here. It's funny because you watched that AEW show. How did the death match in the main event compare to this needle match between these four?
Oh, man. If only Big Japan had so many smoke and so many mirrors, you know. I don't know.
And that's crazy because, and the thing is, like, they had the buzzsaw thing in this match too. And the problem is that these guys are, you know, old, like, for the most part, and they want, and the only way to do these spots safely is to do them at like half speed. So to me, like, I think the deathmatch stuff gets over on violence, but the like actual like storytelling parts of matches, they never really do it for me, and I try to give them. I give them a fair shot. I'm not, you know, going crazy over the violence or anything. It's just that as a match, I just don't think it was that entertaining for 22 minutes.
Yeah,
and I don't.
It was a little long for it.
Yeah, like that's all. You know, hey, Ito's a legend though, so he got the win.
But let's talk about the match that had everybody gasping when it was announced. Daisuke Sekimoto and Walter defeated WG. Yuji Kobayashi and Yuji Hino in 17 minutes, a match that we have rated 9.03. I loved it. I thought this was exactly what could be expected from these four. Just four men going in there, having a fierce battle with everything that you think that they would throw at each other, with chops, clotheslines, lariats, power bombs, suplexes. Just great showcase. And that's the one downside on the match. It was only a showcase for Walter. Just, Dylan, imagine him being in this environment for much longer than just this one match. That would be so great.
Yeah, totally. Like, that would be awesome. He did great here. My favorite part of the match was actually his interactions with Hino. Because I thought Hino was the one of all four of them that actually tried to do more than just the beefy stuff. He tried to bring character into the match.
Yep.
So I appreciate it.
Squared off inside the ring, just standing there, taking Walter's chops like it was nothing. That was great. Yeah, Yuji.
Yeah, there was a spot where Sekimoto suplexed Walter, who was holding on to Hino, and they all suplexed each other in the end. So they all worked together. This was, like, you see these four names, you kind of know what you're going to get in this match. I feel like, you know, like, this is another one of those soul food type of matches. It's like, they didn't rewrite the book or anything like that, but for what they did, it was an incredible match of its style. So I think you have to really give them props on that. I think that a lot of people thought this was like a match of the year type of candidate.
Nah.
Yeah, I feel the same as you, like, to be honest with you. I thought the other match had a lot more. See, that's what about the Noah tag match, which I think a lot of people probably won't think is as good, technically. I think that match had more to it than this one did. I think this was really, like you said, more of a showcase between four hard-hitting, beefy guys, which is always fun and cool to watch, but I don't think really elevated anything. But I can see why this could be a personal favorite match of the year, because it was a lot of fun to watch. These four all worked great together, and it was a really nice treat on this show. And I think, really, honestly, without this match, this show sucked. Like, so you know, like, let's just call it what it is. So I think it really helped out having this match on the show.
Yeah, so going forward for Big Japan.
Hey, one more thing on this match. What did you think of when Okabayashi pointed at the NXT title that Walter had, the NXT UK?
That actually something that is going to happen? I don't think so.
That was so goofy. The NXT UK title. Like, who could possibly give a crap about that? But I love that Okabayashi took the time out. It reminded me, remember when in New Japan when Goto challenged for the TV title from Ring of Honor? And he was like, I don't know what this is, but I'll fight for it.
It's shiny.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me. Okabayashi's like, I don't really know what this is, but...
What this, like, WWE actually is.
It's a title.
Like, it's a title?
They said... Yeah, see, you always want titles in wrestling, so he doesn't care what it is, UK, whatever, it's a title, and that's all that felt. But that would, I tell you what, though, Walter versus Okabayashi is a singles match I could get.
Oh,
like,
oh yeah.
On a match, so.
But Talking about titles, Yuji Kobayashi and Shigehiro Irie are in the semifinals of the Saikyo Tag League against Daichi Yoshimoto and Hideyoshi Kamitani on November 26th. And the other semifinal for the deathmatch block is Masashi Takeda and Takumi Tsukamoto against Ryuji Ito and Ricky Shane Page. And I can see Okabayashi and Irie winning because Sekimoto and Bodyguard are still the champions, and that would be a very beefy match for the first Korakuen Hall show of the year for Big Japan.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Or even just in Yokohama, because they have the show on December 18. And so far they have the junior title match, as I said, Aoki against Hashimoto, Katsuki that is, of course, and Isami Kodaka defense against Abdullah Kobayashi. By the way, what did you think about Jun Kasai showing the middle fingers to both Abdullah Kobayashi and to the Big Japan promoter?
Listen, he doesn't have a care in the world. No fucks to give,
no
Jun
fucks.
Kasai.
Right.
Listen, so I would expect nothing less from the crazy monkey himself.
True. So much for Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Our final topic that I wanted to address on this show is...
Hey, what'd you think about the main event of the Big Japan show?
Didn't we already talk about that? I thought it was a very tame title match. Look, that's Isami Kodaka and Miyamoto. They did what I kind of expected from them in the sense of doing their spots. I thought they would have had a crazier match in the main event of Sumo Hall. It just felt like they were just having this friendly affair here. And, you know, they still had these four boards that they used. They had the nail board. But the nail board itself, you know, the magic of that has gone many, many moons ago.
Yes.
If you know what I mean. And... So it was just a nice little deathmatch title match without really being overly deathmatchy.
Yeah, it had a lot of cool spots, I guess.
They did. True.
They had a big moonsault. That was the best part to me, was when he hit the moonsault off the top of the Giga Ladder.
But as I said with the DDT title match, the finish, yeah, it was there. You know, the knee drop from the Giga Ladder, the Giga Ladder break, I guess it's called.
Yeah, you know, sure. This match had all the same lack of psychology as all the new death matches, pretty much on this one. But I didn't know if you wanted to say anything more about it.
I don't really have any strong feelings about the match. I thought it was a well done match, just good, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you. It looks like Basara is still going to stick around Big Japan here with Kodaka winning again.
That's to be expected.
Listen, it's a Kodaka right now. You have to give it up to him.
2-0 in Sumo Hall.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. He's unbeatable right now. He's awesome. You have to give it up to Kodaka. Yeah, show some respect to that man right now.
Sure. So what I was going to say is that the final topic on this show is Stardom. Because recently there was an article up on Tokyo Sports which had Takaki Kidani kind of rambling around and saying that A, he wanted Io Shirai and Kairi Hojo to come back to Stardom, and that B, he is thinking about implementing an IWGP Women's Championship. But he did not say that he is implementing the Stardom roster incorporating the Stardom roster into New Japan Pro Wrestling. So this got a lot of buzz when I tweeted the translation of that article. A lot of people, I think, got carried away with thinking that now we get a New Japan Women's Division, and some people even tweeted to me that this is what New Japan needs to succeed in the US, that they need a functioning women's division. What did you think about Kidani going out and saying all that stuff?
Well, there's little evidence of that. that this is what New Japan needs to succeed in America, I would have to say. But I will say that, to me, it's not really that unexpected for them, that the idea to have a title like that.
Mm.
It wasn't like this was something that caught me off guard when Bushiroad bought the company. I figured there'd be some kind of interpromotional stuff, and we've already heard the idea of them having a match, even if it's just a dark match, on the Tokyo Dome shows.
Yep.
On the 4th and the 5th. So it really wasn't surprising at all to me to think that they would do that. And I think it could, honestly, if you have a title, you have one big starter match each big show, or, you know, each month, each big show, whatever. I see nothing wrong with that at all, actually. I think it can only help Stardom as well to get more promotion on their own show, somewhat similar to how DDT utilizes Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Exactly.
You know, they always have offer matches, and why not in New Japan? I think there's nothing wrong with that at all, to be honest.
And as far as succeeding in the U.S., I kind of agree, because I think that every time they go to the U.S. going forward, they really should have at least one of the Stardom matches on their card there, just to spice it up a little bit. You know, just to show something different to the crowd. And also, when they want to do their, or if they want to do their expansion correctly, why don't you promote Stardom as well, if it's part of your big company? You know, and so by doing that, they will get more eyes on their product, I think.
There's really just no reason not to.
Exactly.
Like, when you think about it, like, there's just no. I disagree with the idea that they need it to be successful, though. I honestly don't think it makes a big business difference one way or the other in America. I think that's a very minor effect. I'm not saying it will have no effect, but it's hard for me to believe, like, oh, they drew 4,000 in Dallas, and now they're going to do 10,000
no.
to start them.
No.
Like that, you know, cause like that, like, you know, I think that, like, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do regardless either way, but it would only help Stardom to promote it as well, and it would only make the cards better to have variety on the show.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then there's something different, you know, that is always something that people kind of disregard when they don't really know much about the history of Yoshi wrestling, or even the appeal that Yoshi wrestling has or used to have to crowds in Japan. Because before, 1 week before the article that came up on Tokyo Sports, there was this column on Nikkan Sports that I came across, and that is about, that was about female fans in Japan specifically. And the key message of this column was that the opinion of women is that women in the crowds are key for the revival of Yoshi wrestling. Because a lot of the big Yoshi crowds in the 80s that used to be full of women. And the author of this article opened up a line chat and had some opinions of the women that came into this chat room or this chat group in the article. And some of them even said that they shared bitter experiences, that they didn't really feel safe to go to a place full of men. That is what some of them said. But most of them enjoyed the shows without any worries about there being too many men in the crowd. But still, asked about the appeal of women's wrestling, they said they can really empathize easily with the women, and one of them also said that when the efforts of the mental and physical pain are rewarded, the joy comes across better than with male wrestlers. That was something that I found very interesting, but the most important part of that all was that they thought that women will come back to a wrestling show or even go to a wrestling show when they know that there will be other women in the crowd. And that is, in my opinion, key to the revival, as they call it here, of women's wrestling in Japan. I wouldn't really, I don't know if revival is necessarily the right term, because there have been much darker times than right now.
Yeah.
But still, if they want to have a certain resurgence, even back to drawing more than a couple of thousand people to a show, which they clearly plan with this Ota Watch show that Stardom is going to have, they really need to listen to women. And they really have to create places where women feel safe during their shows. Because, you know, we know and we've talked about the Stardom part of this Vice documentary series. And I can totally understand why you wouldn't necessarily feel safe, or you would feel awkward being a woman in the crowd of Stardom show.
I think it's important to note that not just women, but in the prime days of Joshi, most of the audience was teenage girls.
Yes.
Like, not even really women. So you have to really look at that as well when you look at the advertising. And interestingly enough, I would argue that New Japan nowadays has a very large contingent of women fans.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, and in their poll, many of the women actually rejected the idea of having women's wrestling on the show when they had a poll for that as well. So you have to wonder what their marketing is about as well. For in terms of Stardom itself, I completely agree with you that they need to advertise more to women, and particularly, again, I think young girls would be a good target audience for them, because I think that's something that the Joshi scene really has been missing for a little while now. In terms of women at the show, those factors you listed were all very psychological,
mm-hmm.
and things that I, you know, I'm not a girl, so I can't
exactly, yes.
You know, I can't really, like, give you a perfect answer on this. I can only give you my viewpoint as someone who knows the crowds themselves. And what they think, but
no, that is why I think this is so crucial that this column came out specifically looking at what women think about it.
Yeah, like I said, see, so I think that's very interesting, and I think that it just depends on what you're looking for as a fan. But I think what you said is something that anybody can relate to in terms of wanting to be more, you know, what they said around feeling more comfortable if there were more women there.
Yep.
I think that's something that anybody can kind of relate to. If you're comfortable with anybody, like, you'll feel comfortable there. That would be like, you know, would you rather go somewhere by yourself or with friends?
Sure.
You know, that sort of thing. I think that's very human, just a very thing to say that. So I would appreciate that, and I appreciate that those viewpoints were coming out, and hopefully they do listen to them, because I think that's something that if you want to take Joshi to the next level. But I also, my point is that I don't even think it's just Joshi. I think a big part of New Japan's popularity surge is largely, you know, women fans and stuff that they've done. They market their stars like idols to these women, which is a completely different audience than the young girls that loved Joshi in the past. I think that's a completely different audience than what we had. So you'll have to understand how to market things a lot differently than the New Japan model of marketing won't necessarily attract those kind of fans of the old days of Joshi if you were to implement it and start, you know.
Yeah. You know, what makes me a little bit optimistic about this approach is that Takaki Kidani was actually mentioned in this column, and that it was said that this all is in line with Kidani's idea of attracting women and young fans would be the key for future growth of Yoshi Pro Wrestling. So I really hope that they, A, do not incorporate Stardom into New Japan, because as you said, the female fan base of New Japan didn't want it when they were asked about it. And B, it would be much better to have a separate group because of the rich history of separate Yoshi groups and their appeal to young fans, specifically young female fans.
I think we're a ways away from that being a possibility.
I hope so.
New Japan.
Because the idea is being thrown around more and more now.
Well, I think with the title, it's only natural to speculate that. Yes. To be honest, you know, like that's not anything crazy to say. Like, it's kind of logical, actually, to think that. But I think for at least the next year, they're going to give this a fair shot. But I think we're, you know, after that, the first year or two, if they decide from a financial point of view that it's better to absorb them, I think it's very possible. But, I mean, I don't want it to happen. I just think we should be prepared for it in the future, that is a possibility. And that's how it goes with these corporations sometimes. You know, it's not just wrestling. It's not like New Japan, you know, about Stardom. It's a huge corporate conglomerate in Bushiroad. And that's kind of how they do things sometimes. So I do think it's a possibility. And the fact that he said it so soon is kind of worrying on that level. But I do think they have plans for it. And that's more reason for optimism. If you want to look at all of the stuff, not just one thing, but the total of it, much more signs point to them wanting this to succeed on its own and be a separate entity, which I think is what they're going to do for the near future.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that should be the main goal of Bushiroad or Kixroad, that's the owner now, going forward. We're certainly going to have a close look at it. Dylan, final question for you, the big main event for Stardom's final Kurikan Hall show of the year. What do you think, who is going to stand tall in the end?
Well, Mayu just won the title, so...
Yep.
It would have to be her. She just won the red belt title. Yeah, like, just logically. I watched a little bit of that show. I was checking it out. You know, the gift that everyone saw between Mayu and B Priestley was wild, to say the least.
Yeah.
Where B kind of slipped on the top rope.
I would really say it's a slip. A lot of people were throwing stuff at B Priestley for that. That was just an accident.
That's not really that fair. Like you said, it was just an accident. You know, that sort of stuff happens. Like I said, I actually just had a concussion training because of an accident. So from the top rope as well. Not as bad as what Mayu took, though. It was crazy how she must be, you know, she got really lucky on that because it was a terrible fall. But, you know, Mayu did winning the title and everything's okay. So, you know, there's no need for, like, craziness or hatred or anything. But, you know, they had another match up there with Hoshiki versus Jamie Hayter on that same show. And they're really building up Arisa Hoshiki and Mayu Iwatani as, like, the two faces of Stardom right now with the titles. And I think that's a perfect way to go about it. I don't know if Bushiroad had any say in that or anything, you know. The red belt raid kind of ended.
Not like it's a crazy change of a main event personnel. Like Mayu has always been one of the top wrestlers in Stardom, and Arisa Hoshiki has had a great year. So it's not like it's totally off the radar of the usual Stardom approach.
More so, just B's reign kind of ended without fanfare, because she had this long reign and it just kind of ended, like before then. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. The show did all right. You know, it wasn't a great number. It was only 835 fans for their last big Corkin show. So the one, that's going to be in December, right? Their year in climax.
Yep.
So hopefully it does good. Hopefully they can get over 1,000 again. I think that'll be a good starting point. But I think they should, honestly, they really should work to have a Stardom match on those dome shows. Like that should happen for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, it doesn't even have to be a title match. It can just be a tag match. But something should happen where there's a big Stardom match on those shows. And I would put it on the main show just for variety's sake. But even if it's a dark match, that's better than nothing. Just because, look, there's going to be probably, 40,000 fans in these dome shows. There is no way that will ever happen in Stardom right now for them to have that many viewers on their product. So why would you not at least give them a chance, even if you convert a very small percentage of those 40,000 fans, just to have them take interest in it could really be a big boost. Just 200 or 300 fans per show would be a huge boost for Stardom. So that's how they should look at it, in my opinion. And that's something that I really look forward to. And hopefully the year in climax goes better than this last show with Corkin Hall.
Yes. Yes, so guess that's it for now. If you want to get interaction with us, you can, of course, send us an email, as always. Japan@mlw.com is the address. And you can also send us a tweet, talk with us on Twitter, debate stuff with us on there. I am at Striga, STRIGGA. Dylan is at Dylan Zero Sky. And for our Sumo Hallism episode of the Eastern Lariat, this is it from the two of us now. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.